This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In a research paper called The Social Construction of Mental Illness and Its Implications for the Recovery Model, psychologist Michael Walker writes that recovery in mental health has most often been defined as a process by which people labeled with mental illness regain a sense of hope and move towards a life of their own choosing. But he adds that what remains hidden is the extent to which people have gotten stuck in medical interpretations of their experiences.
Michael Walker is working to implement the recovery model within the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. We asked him about the challenges involved in implementing recovery approaches. In the first part of that interview, Michael spoke about the role of language, the influence of medical and psychological dogma, and common sense skills that practitioners already possess that can be used from a recovery perspective.
Language determines a lot. What's possible, it acts sort of like a straitjacket and limits what's possible. A word, like say treatment plan, brings with, or medications, let's say medications, that's a very highly symbolic word, brings with it an entire world of relationships and possibilities and what's not possible. Of course, we know that the word medications implies a chemical imbalance, and it implies the expertise of the mental health professionals. It implies the passive patient role in which most people are when they're immersed in that paradigm. I could go on and on about this. It is the water to the fish, and that's why it's so hard to see. But it determines everything. It determines the roles, the practices, and it keeps you from seeing the consequences of these practices and these roles. So that's the very insidious nature of the way language works and culture works. And what I'm saying here is that despite the reference to science, the authority of science, mental health is a culture. And you could probably say science itself is a culture. It's a language. Even though you can refer to the reason and science as a source of authority in what you're trying to propose, but even though you can look at science, the scientific basis of mental health as being pretty weak to begin with, they still reference science as an ultimate authority. What does the research say? This diagnosis, that diagnosis. Those are highly scientific words that bring forth the modernist notion of science having the ultimate authority. I realize, and this image has been coming to me for the last few years now, the image of the chimera, the Greek mythological creature with a lion's head and a goat body, with the goat's head coming out of the torso of the body, and then there's a serpent's tail. That's exactly the image that comes to me when I think of the transition of, at least in the system that I'm a part of, LA County. The lion basically is the medical model, and basically the practices of the medical model, the vocabulary. It really is still running the show, despite the goat's head popping up out of the back of this creature, sort of spewing the rhetoric of recovery. If the medical model, with its reference to its foundations in the scientific paradigm, it doesn't look to the practitioners as one truth of many, or just a point of view or an interpretation. It looks like the truth. That is a very characteristic of the modern self that is not introduced to postmodernism. So we're dealing with people that really are real believers. And of course, the culture as a whole looks to these experts to what to believe. And so the entire culture believes this stuff as if it were absolute truth. To try to introduce ideas of self-determination and client choice, all these wonderful principles, I hate to say this, but you're really kind of putting lipstick on a pig. It's very superficial, and the practices and the relationships the role relationships are still patriarchal and still reductionistic, and we're still reducing people. And ultimately, it's that chemical imbalance that we're dealing with. Well, you can say all you want about recovery, but we got to deal with this chemical imbalance, and on and on and on and on and on and on. Most people in the profession, I think, would agree that this idea of being eclectic, that it's useful, and that many, many people say that they're somewhat eclectic. And what that means is they draw from many different models. Despite the context in which they're immersed, which is the medical model, essentially, or theoretical models of psychology, and et cetera, the pragmatic force is there that in individual clinicians or helpers, workers, whatever, will see the results. They'll see positive results with doing a thought record in CBT or empathy. They'll see the positive results of empathy. Now, if we were to take those skills, what they call decontextualize them, you still have the skills, but you don't have the background in which they were originally created. You don't have the ideas of the way in cognitive behavioral therapy, for example, it's still based on diagnosing people and having different approaches for different diagnoses and all that, and that there's patients and clients, and it's paternalistic. But there's a lot of valuable practices and skills there. You can do for practically all the modalities. These modalities wouldn't even continue to exist if there weren't practical things that were producing results there. So I'm saying this is the helpful thing and the hopeful thing. Now I've come to really realize that you can decontextualize these practices. These become the paint and the brushes with which you work on a highly individualistic way with people, and with the person at the center of that, whose worldview we immerse ourselves in. And we have tools that we can kind of paint along with our client to create new possibilities and new worldviews and new ways of approaching things. And it's an art form. I agree with Robert Whittaker that this is where it's headed. We're headed towards human services and mental health in particular as an art form, which is centered in the client's worldview.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca.
Michael Walker is a psychologist who is working to implement the recovery model within the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. Michael recently shared his thoughts about the implementation of recovery approaches in an in-person interview with People First Radio. In the last part of that interview, Michael speaks about the progress being made in transforming the mental health profession, and he identifies some specific challenges.
At LA County, we've put a lot of money into recovery. We've had this Mental Health Services Act passed, I guess it was about a decade ago, and a lot of money and training has gone into promoting, reorganizing our programs around recovery and wellness. The good part about it is that we do have peer advocates, we do have wellness centers, we do have consumer volunteer programs. And generally, there's much more of an allowance and openness for people like myself who want to pioneer. There's a listening for me now that there wasn't, say, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. On the other hand, the kind of training, like I said before, that chimera thing really does exist. There's the foundation of the medical model. It's really the truth for people, all the implications of that. And what happens is in the training that professionals get in recovery, it's very cursory, it's very general, abstract, even though they give examples of how to facilitate client choice, for example. When the therapist leaves the training, they're going back into their environment where they've got to produce a certain amount of units of service, and they've got to see a number of clients and deal with all kinds of stuff. All that stuff that they learned really went out the window. On the other hand, there's something else that's going on, at least in LA County and probably statewide, is a big and nationwide for that matter. This idea, this big thrust towards evidence-based practices. Evidence-based practices do not even scratch the surface of what recovery really means. If you look at the basic principles of recovery, self-determination, client choice, building on strengths, evidence-based practices don't even address that. They are mentioned in this area as maybe innovative practices that have shown that worked, and that kind of gets them in the door. Problem is that, you know, these are statistical studies, and so you've got something that you know that works with 30 of 50 people. We're trying to develop a template with which we're going to try to fit people into, rather than deal from the person's own subjectivity, their own worldview, and expand on that, and treat people as adults. And, you know, it's a whole different thing. I call evidence-based practices tangential recovery practices. And so the fact that they're spending so much money on this training on evidence-based practices is really beside the point. That should be sort of number 10 on a list of 10 things to be doing. The other thing is that the sort of the way it normally gets implemented is we talk about doing what the client wants, being client-driven, which means, okay, you come up with your goal, but that breaks down when the therapist disagrees with the goal. So then how do you work that out? That's something that people need to know how to do. The other thing is, if they agree with a goal, then the therapist, 9 times out of 10, okay, well, let me show you how you reach that goal. Send you over to the psychiatrist. First things first, get you on these medications. How else are you going to get a job if you're hearing voices? So that person may or may not want to do that. And so the means have to be client chosen as well, not just the ends. It's not that I'm going to hide my opinions and just do whatever the client says, the person says, I should say. I'm going to allow for them to expand on their ideas, and we'll explore those ideas. I may just, when it's appropriate and timely, mention other things. But it should be an acceptable tool to people, and they should embrace a tool. And that's another part of the artistry of this. It's certainly the lack of postmodern education, I guess you could say. If you're going to say the people that are coming out of school are indoctrinated into the medical model, but it's not a medical model to them. It is the truth of the world. It's as true as this to them. It's as real and true as this table is we're looking at. So since that's the case, anything else looks very ephemeral. Recovery looks like an abstract idea that kind of looks like it has its good aspects. But look at this table. You can't deny this table. If you get a postmodern education, you see how this table was built, or you see how the medical model was designed and where it comes from, and it's the fact that, and many people are aware of the pseudoscience aspects of mental health. If you begin to see that the main modality of mental health is this reductionist way of looking at people as if they were machines, and that comes from our post-Enlightenment love affair with science. We call that now in the postmodern world scientism, and it's an inappropriate use of science. People are not machines. And so when you treat them as machines, you reduce them, you look to component parts, and you see how the parts interact, and then you replace or the parts that are missing or broken. So that's a very reductionist view in contrast to the idea of a holistic or complex system point of view, where the brain can use language to affect its ways of thinking and patterns and impulses and feelings. In other words, you can use language, coaching, mindfulness to impact the brain, even CBT, in such a way that it can begin to experience a lot of the things that medications do. And you actually start to feel better. You actually, you know, many of the people that I work with lower their medications and eventually get off the medications because they've got many tools, and medication has basically been delegated to a tool. you know, on the medical model, medication is not just a tool, it is the cure. I have sort of mixed feelings about the word recovery. Not so much wellness, but recovery. Recovery, as I see it, is really still, it is part of the disease paradigm. What are we recovering from? So we're recovering from an illness. What if we challenge or we ask, what do you mean by an illness? And you go right back into the medical model. I'm saying that, look at, we got people on this planet, they're all dealing with emotions, feelings, habits, thoughts, peculiar thoughts, voices, moods, being stuck, all kinds of things. If when you decide you're going to say some people need to recover from that and other people don't need to recover from that, I think you're making an artificial distinction that just makes more problems than it solves. So I've really gotten to this point where I'm at this what I call a radical normalization, where what we're really up to is, if we're recovering from anything, it's the human condition, but you're never going to recover from that. So that's the, you know, when people say, I've got a condition, well, what's your condition? They'll tell me their diagnosis. And I'll say, I'll sort of deconstruct that and really bring up the point that really what we have is the human condition that we're dealing with. What do we need are the tools to deal with that. The way I see it anyway is there is no such thing as mentally ill people, and there's no such thing as all these diagnoses. It's just people with behaviors, people with different habits. There's no reason to cluster them into categories. And if you're going to help somebody, that's the last thing you want to do. You want to know the individual. You want to know what works for them, what doesn't work for them, what's important to them. And all those things are the component parts of getting people moving in a direction that they want to move.
Michael Walker is a psychologist who is working to implement the recovery model within the LA County Department of Mental Health. His research paper, The Social Construction of Mental Illness and Its Implications for the Recovery Model, is available online. Just use the search terms Michael Walker and social construction to find it.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.